Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Kings Roundtable still rolling along, and we wanted to take a minute to send our thoughts out to Dejan Milojevic's family, who passed away from a heart attack, one of the assistant coaches for the Golden State Warriors. So wanted to send that out, and same to the Warriors family and everybody in that organization dealing with that loss. We have Brendan Nunes, who has joined the show, gracing us with his presence. Frankie Cardicelli's been rocking with us on Styles and Watkins. Nate Littlefield doing a great job as well. And guys, it's going to get pretty spicy here, so I hope you're ready to go here. And I said something last night. I don't think it got interpreted perfectly well, because I think there's a difference between fans and the organization. And with Pascal Siakam being moved and a lot of these names that they're available, they're not available, you go back and forth with this. My thought process is, from a big picture perspective, if you are Vivek, right, teams do not go, and we have somebody on the text line saying, I get a fan base being frustrated if their team is a first round exit for 4, 5, and 6 years in a row, but the Kings have had one playoff appearance since the Bush administration. Seeing Kings fans already crying is wild. And that's one take. A lot of the people responding to me last night did not have that take. And this is where things are going to get a little bit awkward here. If you are Vivek, right, the bottom line is, it was a pretty low bar. So in your mind, you don't have to do anything hasty if you don't want to, because the Kings going to the playoffs this season is still a win. It might not feel like that if you are a six seed and get bounced in the first round, but this whole, well, they were a three seed last year, that doesn't really matter. Every year is different. The West is a mess. And I guess I'm saying that to just prepare Kings fans. Each day that passes, I said this to you guys on Monday, you did a heck of a job on your show, the Kings Insider Show. I don't think a big move is going to happen. Now, how small or how marginal of a move is going to happen may be, but they can get to the playoffs, and these Kings fans can be upset and cry and all this stuff, but y'all went 16 years without a playoff run, and everybody knows it. Ultimately, deep down, you're happy to be there. It's only the first year. Right? It's only the second year of you now being competitive again.
Yeah, I mean, I just say that I don't think progress of a team is always linear. And you can kind of just flirt around the same area for a little while before you end up taking that jump. Mm-hmm. And you need to be patient. You need to be picky. If we're talking about getting another player in here, if that's going to be the difference maker, it has to be the right guy, because it's much worse to feel like you're backed into a corner and you have to do something, and then you're acting out of desperation, you make the wrong move, and then the team could be stuck here mm-hmm. for who knows how long, you know? So I think the fact that they're not making, or not that they're not, because we still don't know, we have plenty of time before the trade deadline, and obviously they're going to be aggressive in having conversations, but if it's not the right guy, that's a way worse outcome than just waiting for the correct player to eventually become available, however that be.
I mean, Monty McNair has proven, I mean, they've proven already that they will not be strong-armed into, like, making a mm-hmm. a rash decision. And they haven't yet. I mean, again, the Sabonis-Halliburton trade even was, I wouldn't even look at that as, like, a rash, like, knee-jerk reaction. The Kings weren't trying to make the playoffs when they made that trade. They were trying to set themselves up for the future, and it worked. I mean, it has worked. There are a million opinions on the Halliburton-Sabonis trade, which will go on until the end of time. But we can't deny the fact that that trade put the Sacramento Kings and Indiana Pacers both in a great position. The Kings and Pacers entering tomorrow's game, same record. They're both in the playoff mix. The Kings made the playoffs last year. Tyrese Halliburton's a star. Domantas Sabonis should be an all-star again this year. He's done. He's performed well enough to put himself in that conversation again. It's worked out well. De'Aaron Fox, all that. And I think that losses like the past couple have been triggering. They've been painful. They've been more of annoying, like a nuisance and annoying than anything, when you look at the fact that the Kings have looked really good. Again, like the Kings team that we all knew last year, the last two games, I've seen them. I don't know about you guys, but I've seen it. Like, they look great in Milwaukee coming out of the gates. They were dominating Phoenix last night. They really dominated 40 of the 48 minutes of that game last night. Mm-hmm. And I think if the Kings come out tomorrow night and they perform in a similar fashion against Indiana, it's going to ease some of those nerves. Now, that being said, I do think that the Kings need to make moves at some point. Maybe not this year, but I feel like this roster, where it is right now, it's not a polished product. It's not the final product of what this group is going to look like at its best, in my opinion. But to Brendan's point, I agree. They're not going to make any panic moves because they had a 22-point collapse. Is it embarrassing? Yeah. Should that happen? No. But it's not going to make Monty McNair scramble for his phone and start making phone calls. Like, that's just not what's going to happen.
The other thing I'll add real quick is that, like you pointed out, they played great a majority of that game. And the same thing we said for Milwaukee, right? The other day, Monday, we're having a conversation about, like, do you feel good about that outcome or not so? And I said I felt good. Like, I feel like their offense has looked over these last couple games more like last year. But obviously, the collapse makes, like, that is an understandable focus. But I feel like there is an aspect of the offense has looked good recently for the most part.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's especially, yeah, like Frankie said, I mean, these last two games, it's felt like the most that it's felt like last year so far this season. And I think that's definitely a positive. I think the problem is, you know, you're seeing new problems, honestly. Right. I mean, the turnovers yesterday, the fact that you can't seem to rely on De'Aaron in the clutch the same way you did last year. I mean, it seems like, I mean, kind of like you said, each year is its own individual entity, and it feels like we were banking too much on progression and consistency, continuity from last year, when in reality, I mean, that's just not how it works. You know, just because somebody did something last year does not guarantee that they're going to do something this year. And I think the Kings are really falling victim to a lot of that. A lot of guys who aren't performing to how well they played last year. And I think it's led to a lot of inconsistency of this year as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that they'll never say anything like that because you want fans to believe, and right, they're not going to buy tickets if you say, hey, this year, we just want to get to the playoffs again. Don't forget, you haven't been. Fans don't want to hear that. Fans want to keep progressing. But I was looking at, when people were kind of coming at me yesterday, I was looking at the Warriors' path. And the Warriors, that year before they went to the finals, what happened is they had went to the Western Conference Finals, lost to the Clippers, and then, if I'm not mistaken, the next year they lost in the first round to the Nuggets. Okay. Then after that, I believe is when Steve Kerr came to town, and after that is when they came in and won the finals, okay, right, if I'm not mistaken. So that was not necessarily – how often does it actually happen? People like to think of teams like a job, right? Well, I came in as an associate. Now I'll be a senior associate. Now I'll become a manager. Now I'll become a senior manager. And that's not how it works in sports, right? Hey, you went to the playoffs. That doesn't mean – and we did beaming or dreaming because we were hopeful. But the West is a mess right now, and they're trying to figure these things out. So it's not, hey, we lost in the first round this season. Next season, we'll lose in the second round. That, like, that's not how it's going to happen. You might catch lightning in a bottle. Like I said, the Warriors won the finals a year after they lost in the first round. So you just don't know. You're just building a core, and hopefully, to be honest, you hit lightning in a bottle, and then you go from there. So I think that's how people kind of view it, and it would be great if it works like that. I mean, look at Denver.
That's what I just pulled up, actually.
There's injuries, too. Let's hear it.
Yeah, you know, you look at 17-18, they won 46 games. I think that's the year that they lost to Minnesota in the last game of the season that would have got them in the playoffs. And then the next season, they lose in Western Conference semis, 54 wins. So some linear progress there, right, I guess you could call it. The year after, 46 wins, and they snuck their way to the Western Conference Finals. I think they played two teams that maybe weren't great. That was a little bit of a weird year when it comes to that one. But you go from Western Conference Finals to then the next year, you won one more game. You go from 46 to 47, and then you lost in the semis. The year after that, they lost in the first round, 48 games they won, and then they win the championship.
Yep.
You know, like similar to what you're pointing out with Golden State, this is just not linear. And I think my response to the, like, well, they're not going to say this year that, you know, we just want to make the playoffs this year. I don't think it's about this year. It's about what is the eventual path to a championship. And if it means that just being patient this year, like we talked about, then if they think that's the best way to go, why not?
Yeah.
You know?
Got to get to a break. When we get back, continuing this conversation, and we're going to get put on the spot here. And Frankie is looking at me because he knows it's going down.
You said we're going to get put on.
Chris, you already know. Chris, you already know. You already know. But the two of you are getting.
You can smell the cooking.
Oh, yeah. Can you smell what Styles and Watkins are cooking? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Not only are you getting the normal King's Roundtable, we gave you an emergency roundtable on Monday, and Frankie Carticelli just says to me, and Brendan agreed, we're getting a bonus segment. We have two more segments of the King's Roundtable breaking down all things Pascal Siakam and the collapse of the Sacramento Kings. Hey, guys, I don't know if you saw this one. I've only said it about 12 times on the show today. So here it goes for 13 because I cannot say it enough. And Chris already knows where I'm going with this. Teams facing deficits of 22 or more in the fourth were 0-1,244.
Oh,
since August 23rd, 2020. 0-1,244 games.
Kings, there's always got to be one.
That's not...
like a champion today.
But Chris, you were in the building for that D'Angelo Russell
sure was.
Nets game.
Yep.
Did that, yeah. Like, I think being in person, it's a way different feeling, but... was that a similar just avalanche of just misfortune for the Kings where they have a 20-plus point lead and they just lose it over 8 minutes?
This one felt faster. And maybe it's because of the turnovers and the block shots, but it just felt like things snowballed really quickly. Mm-hmm. Like, by the time HB got called for that moving screen, you could kind of feel the energy in Club Phoenix, as Steve Kerr would call it. It really started to get loud in there. They started pumping up the acoustics a bit. And you really felt the momentum at that point. And that's kind of when I was like, ugh, this thing is going downhill fast. And then you have KD on the other side starts splashing things. And it's like, ugh, you can see where this movie's going.
I thought that they would make it respectable. And the Suns would say, man, if we had played like this to start, right, we would have got the W. I didn't think they'd actually pull it off until... basically, they pulled it off. And once it was in the range of, all right, KD can take over, once you were within the two possessions, that's when it became a problem. All right, guys, I'm just going to say it. And Chris and I discussed more, but we want to speak with our guys here. Brendan Nunes, are you 100% sure? And you don't have to say 100. How sure are you that De'Aaron Fox is a franchise 1A player for a championship team?
I'm like 90% sure. Like, I think that's been my biggest development this year.
Frankie,
really.
How sure are you?
I'd match that, 90 or even like 90. If he's knocking down threes like he has been this year, that was the last part of his game that needed to be reached. If this is real, yeah, I think he absolutely is.
I don't. I'm not that high. I mean, I think the rest of this season is figuring that out. And maybe that's just my opinion personally. But I got to see more, man. If you look at the list, and Chris and I were going through the list of just really good players in the NBA, we were going through the list when the breaking news broke. By the way, if you're just now tuning in, Pascal Siakam to the Pacers, Bruce Brown, and three picks. Yeah, three picks to the Toronto Raptors. Because that is what I'm struggling with here. And really only because De'Aaron is our guy, okay? And he is the franchise player. And I just felt like after a collapse like last night, everybody has been on the chopping block in some degree, whether it's Sabonis, Coach
hot
Mike
seat.
Brown,
hot
the hot seat, right? And just De'Aaron hasn't been on it at all. And I just felt like it was only right to have that conversation because I don't really know how many 1A franchise guys there are on a championship team, right? Are we? And then that becomes a question of where that line is De'Aaron one of, are there 20 in the league? I don't know.
Probably not.
So, okay, are there 15?
I think this becomes the question of, like, right, what is elite?
Right.
Like, how many people? I think it's everybody's got their own definition. Everyone's got their own you know, oh, I can only have six elite, or if you have 10 elite, then who truly is elite? Mm-hmm. Like, is there elite of elite? Is there levels to eliteness? Like, I think it kind of gets into a dangerous slippery slope there. But, I mean, yeah, I think that, you know, to answer your question, I would say I'm definitely less than these two, but I feel like De'Aaron Fox can be a guy. I'm not 100% sure he is. And I think for me, next year is that when I'm going to get an official answer on that. I think the fact that we saw this year the level he's able to get to, but I think right now, I mean, I have his last 10 games since December 31st, 10 game sample size, 22 points per game, 4.7 assists, 42% from the field, 37% from three. That's a big enough sample size for me to tell, like, it's really hard to be a 30-point-per-game scorer in the NBA. It's really, really hard because every single night you've got, no matter if you're winning, if you're losing, getting blown out, blowing out another team, to have to get to 30 points just about every single night is really, really tough. And I think De'Aaron's learning about the fatigue aspect of that. Like, it takes a certain level of conditioning to be able to play at that level for an entire 82-game season. So that's why I say next year is when I'll get the official answer to it. But I think we saw this year how high the ceiling goes.
Yeah, my problem with putting De'Aaron in that category, and again, so much is on this season, is just from looking at past champions. Right, yep. He's not in the same category as any of the best.
Well, that's
players
where it's
there's like five guys in
because
the league
that's
that
like
are by themselves.
Well, to win a championship, that's where this conversation stems from. Is you got to be again? Like, let's think of the last champions here. Yeah. We have Steph Curry.
Giannis. Yeah,
we've got Jokic. We've got LeBron.
Kawhi.
I mean, just think about NBA titles in history. I mean, it's Tim Duncan. It's
Kobe,
it's
no, and Shaq. I'm not saying to make a move or anything like that. I'm just trying to put it
no,
all
I'm,
into
I'm
perspective.
I'm trying to support
because
your
De'Aaron
argument.
Has been in this conversation of, oh, we know you guys are at 90%. Yeah. I can't look. I'm not saying to move on. I'm saying we got to see how this season ends, right, and really decide what this thing is going to look like. And if we want to open it up to beyond just De'Aaron,
right.
The question is, is De'Aaron and Sabonis a good enough 1-2? That's another way to look at this thing.
Sure.
Because I don't know that either.
Well, so I have two things I'll say on the De'Aaron front. Is that you don't really have a choice but to believe in it, in my mind.
I agree. I'm not saying
to
get rid of
him. It's so insanely difficult to go and get another one of those guys. And also, he's 26.
They're all old.
Are we seeing the best version of De'Aaron Fox right now? Like, he's gotten better, significantly better over the last 2 years. And I think there's reason to believe he could keep getting better. Like you're saying, he's getting used to putting up 30 a night and the conditioning that comes with while doing pretty good on the defensive end, I think, more often than not. And he could just continue to get better. This guy's 26.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we're seeing the best version of De'Aaron Fox yet. So 2 years down the line, maybe we feel better about him flirting with MVP ballots, you know?
Yeah.
Outside of Jokic, who will be 30, I think next season, all the guys we just named are, what, like 35?
Not Giannis.
34?
Not Luka, who doesn't have one
not
yet.
Not Luka.
Tatum,
true.
I guess.
Not Anthony Edwards, who's on the up. Not Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
But as far as like recent champions,
I think he's
guys
in that
led,
tier, though.
There's a couple of different conversations.
I would say
right?
I don't think.
There's the champions who, sure, with Steph and LeBron, probably not a fair comparison. Then there's the conversation that Chris just brought up, the new wave, okay? The new wave of guys that you feel could be that guy. You guys are putting Fox into that conversation of the Lukas and the, I guess, the Jason Tatums, if you will.
Anthony Edwards.
The Anthony Edwards.
For
is
sure.
Fox in that category? I don't know how, well, we know how people will vote because nobody votes for the Kings for the All-Stars, so they're not voting at all. But I think that you ask 10 people that, 10 hoop heads, you're going to get probably 10 different answers.
Yeah, and he's probably at the bottom of that list, you know? Like, he's not Tatum. He's not Luka.
National people aren't taking De'Aaron over Shai either.
I don't think so, but I
think
that there's a
conversation. You got 30 points per game, and you have leading the league in steals with Shai. I don't think many national people are taking De'Aaron.
One seed, right? One or two seed, right?
Two
right.
Seed, yeah.
I think that's fair, but I don't know that, like, down the line, if
that stays the same way. Like, I just...
Right.
Things are fluid, for that's sure. A, but right? That, I mean, right. People get hurt, situations change.
What we've learned, but I guess, what we've learned from you, Brendan, is this thing, and what we've kind of discussed is this thing is it's a process, right? We're not going to say trust the process, but it's a process, and it's not happening this year. Right. Regardless if they go get somebody, most likely it's not happening this year. The question becomes, at what point is it, all right, guys, right? I don't think they've done enough for, like the texter said, this isn't the fourth year that they've lost in the first round, sure. Right? It's only the first year coming off a playoff run. So expectations, maybe we're just a little bit high to start.
Definitely. All offseason, I mean, when people would ask us, what should the Kings do? I feel like most of us said they probably won't be a 3 seed, but that doesn't necessarily mean they won't be a better team, like in terms of building towards a champion. And I think pretty much universally we all saw a lot of people say, what are you talking about? Right. How can you not? I think even Kyle Draper yelled in my face, how can you not get better? It's about getting better. And I don't think that that's true.
Yeah, and nobody saw this coming. Well, I think we all saw the Thunder getting better, but not necessarily this. Although that's the only team. Hopefully the Kings get the Thunder in the playoffs. That's the only team they can beat at this point in time. All right, got to get to a break when we get back. Getting Brendan's thoughts on the Pascal Siakam trade and who should we look at next for the Kings. You know I want Dorian Finney-Smith. Siles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
This is Sacktown Sports.
Sometimes you laugh and sometimes you cry.
Whoa.
I think we did both last night, watching the Kings collapse to the Phoenix Suns. Sacktown Sports Kings Insiders joining us for a bonus segment as Stiles and Watkins takes you up to 2 p.m. Nate Littlefield doing his thing behind the glass as always, and wanting to reopen the conversation on Pascal Siakam. Brendan, you saw it come down. There are some comparisons saying, hey, did this mean that Pascal chose Indiana over Sacramento? That was from our own Carmichael Dave. What was your kind of first feeling when you saw that the news finally broke?
Yeah, I guess probably a little bit of relief, honestly, just get to be done with that conversation. I feel like it's all anybody's been talking about, and that's understandable. He's a really good player. I think that he would have been a great fit in Sacramento. I think he makes a lot of sense for Indiana, too, but obviously the details of this potential package had been out there for a couple days. I guess it was primarily yesterday, right, that it really came out, but 3 first-round picks, like, you got to feel pretty good about re-signing this guy, I guess. Mm-hmm. They have to have some reason to feel like they can either convince him or that he will be open to signing. And you'd have to think that they also are willing to give him that ridiculous contract. And yeah, I mean, it coming out that it's the 2024 Indy first, protected 1-3, mm-hmm. that's something that not many other teams were going to be able to beat that, I feel like. Like, Indy's doing okay this year when it comes to the standings, but that's pretty intriguing, you know? And the same with their 2026 first. Like, these are very light protections on these picks, where that one's 1-4 and, one, like I mentioned, 1-3 on the 2024 first. So, you know, I think it makes sense from Toronto's side.
Yeah.
I would pull the trigger on that very easily. And it's an interesting trio, I guess, in Indiana. It does feel like they're trying to accelerate the timeline a little bit, though.
Yeah, is that a big three per se? I think you'd have to say yes.
Like, who is their five guy? Like, if who's their death lineup?
Yeah, probably Tyrese, obviously,
right.
And then Siakam and Miles Turner, and
either Nembhard or Mathurin.
Mathurin. Probably, right?
Mathurin, for sure.
Even like Neesmith is kind of running into a good 3-and-D player. Nembhard's good.
Based on these numbers, it would be either Neesmith or Obi Toppin.
Well, and they still have the assets to get more if they want to.
TJ McConnell.
You're forgetting about a big part of their big three and their equation, guys. Buddy Hield's on that roster.
That's right.
I said earlier, I'm shocked. When I saw salary filler in the pre-trade details, I was like, that's just coded language for Buddy Hield.
See you later.
And it ended up being Jordan Nwora. So shout out Buddy Hield, who continues to cockroach over there in Indy.
By the way, if you're just now joining us, Pascal Siakam is an Indiana Pacer. He is headed to Indiana to join Tyrese Haliburton and Miles Turner as the Raptors get back three first-round picks and Bruce Brown. This is from Woj an hour ago. Pascal Siakam is excited about the deal to the Pacers and expected to be eager to work out a new contract with the franchise this summer. Sources tell ESPN Siakam can be a free agent in July.
What does that even mean?
It'd be so funny if the reporting was just like, oh, he's not happy about this at all.
Exactly. It doesn't mean anything.
I expect to enjoy my dinner I'm going to have.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, but what if it's not great?
What if it's not great?
I'm going to get some Mongolian barbecue.
It's a gamble, man.
It's going to be good. I'm very excited about it.
I think it's also, it reminds me almost of when Morey held on to Simmons forever, and everybody's like, gosh, you're ruining the value. You're not going to get anything good. You've waited too long. His value's in the gutter. And he turned it into James Harden.
Right.
And Masai held on to Pascal Siakam for a very long time. To pretty much the last moment that you could without taking it all the way to the deadline, and you turn him into three first-round picks.
Yeah.
Another lesson of just takes one. That's just it, man. One. It just takes one to throw out a crazy deal, and that's what Portland waited for as well. Like, if you hold out, I mean, it's shown that you'll eventually get the deal. People at the end of the day are a lot more desperate to get stars than to just wait and sit around, and that's why – you know, I mean, that really just kind of brings up the Kings situation, but it's definitely another case in the, you know, you just wait it out and somebody's going to throw something. Someone's going to get desperate. You just got to wait long enough.
Yeah. And, you know, on the text line from the 916, a lot of comparisons. This texter saying, hey, we should just enjoy where we are compared to where we were. I do think that is it a crazy statement to say that maybe this season could be good for Kings fans to recalibrate reality, right? You have not gone to the playoffs in 16 years. Then you wake up one day and you're a 3 seed and you're playing the Warriors. You get to game 7. Did it maybe make Kings fans think that, you know, you would probably say that, okay, maybe they were a little ahead of schedule last season. And I think that's might be part of the reason there's nowhere left to go but up from here. Whereas it's not like if the Kings had snuck into the playoffs, didn't have home court, still lost in 7 games, I think that the feeling would be more like this 9-1-6 versus how we're seeing a lot of people like, you got to go now, you got to keep getting better, you got to do this, you got to do that. They came out of nowhere last season and I think surprised a lot of people, and now people think it's the norm when it's just really hard to win basketball games in the NBA.
I think like last year was a matter of, and I don't want to equate it like spot on with what the Giants did, the San Francisco Giants did in 2021, but kind of like how they needed everything to kind of go right, and like a lot of players overperformed, and they just were this great story, and it was really fun to follow and be a part of. The Kings are kind of like that too in a way because they had a bunch of guys have career years.
Yeah,
like,
we had a caller compare them as well.
Yeah, and it's kind of similar. And like I will say this, the Kings are not dropping off like how the 2022 or 23 Giants were. The Kings are still a good team. And again, they're ahead of where they were last year from a win-loss standpoint, but the rest of the West got better too. But I think it's just a matter of the other guys that were playing really well last year, they aren't doing as much. Like Kevin Herter's had a rough start to the year so far. Harrison Barnes has taken a step back. Keegan Murray shook off a rough start, and he's taken that step forward, but the Kings aren't getting as much from those other pieces, which is why I'm kind of looking at not really a big significant move that might happen, but some around the edges moves, because maybe the guys that they have aren't essentially the perfect fit for what this team needs to be, where this team needs to be at its peak. And I think that last year did kind of heighten expectations, but the Kings are still really in a good spot. They are a half game back from the 5 spot. They've had some horrible losses the past couple of nights that really kind of put a blemish on the fact that they've played well. I mean, their last 2 games, again, just talking about where they were last year, the last 2 games kind of mirror that. Last 2 games for the Kings, 129.5 points per game, 51% from the field, 43 from three, 34 assists, and only 11 turnovers. Like, they're playing some really good basketball, but it's those late-game situations, and again, up by 4 with 18 seconds at the free throw line in Milwaukee. You lose. Up by 22 with 8 minutes left in Phoenix. You lose. These are late game execution problems that a lot of winning teams like Milwaukee, who has won a championship, like Phoenix, who has been to the finals, which not really with this core, but they have guys like Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, guys that have been in the league for a long time. The Kings are still kind of getting used to that. They don't have guys like that with that much experience outside of Harrison Barnes and JaVale McGee. Like, they don't have guys that have been there. And yes, I use those two names, everybody. I use those two names because that's what the Kings have as far as experience on their team. So
champions.
I don't think the sky is falling. Before we go, like, my parting thought is I don't think the sky is falling. The Kings are in a good spot. Are they a perfect product? No. But I don't think it's time to hit the panic alarm by any means.
Yeah, before you guys get out of here, you know, I'm thinking about this, the trade market right now, and it's very similar to the housing market. I know I'm the oldest one in this in this round table, so obviously I'm going to take it there, because whether it's a market for sellers or a market for buyers, in the NBA right now, it seems like it is a market for sellers, right? And do you truly think the Kings are going to make a move? Because right now it just seems like the price tag is too crazy, and I don't know if we want to blame the Timberwolves because they started this Pandora's box with the five first rounders. But now, like, I mean, I like Dorian Finney-Smith, but if he's, who isn't worth a first rounder at this point in time that's worth anything? So that is another reason I feel like, because, you know, people are seeing DeJounte Murray, that's clearly going to be a first rounder. Everybody is a first rounder. Yeah. Do you think that maybe the current NBA market, with it being a seller's market, might hinder the Kings from doing anything significant, because everybody's looking for those first-round picks?
Yeah, it takes some separation, right? Like, the existence of the play-in and the way it's been embraced, I think, makes a lot less sellers, which obviously makes the ones that are selling a lot more valuable or more sought after, because it shortens the market, really, to your point. So I think that's definitely the case, but we also could see, as you get closer to the deadline, is when teams really decide, okay, what is our direction this year? Are we going to be sellers? There could be new ones that emerge, you know? Indiana or Toronto could, I don't know the exact timeline on how long they have to wait, but, like, there could be Bruce Brown conversations eventually again, you know? And maybe they don't have, again, enough time before they're allowed to do that at this deadline. But next year, like, you never know who is going to end up being a seller. I feel like often, right before the deadline, it's like, what? They're making this guy available? And that kind of changes the market. And I think that's another reason that the Kings could wait for a guy like that. Like, you don't, if you don't love a Zach LaVine, if you don't love a Lauri Markkanen for the prices considered, or a DeJounte Murray, then kind of like I was saying earlier, don't force it. I don't think that they're in a spot where they need to feel like their back's against the wall. All these guys are locked up except Malik Monk for like 3+ years. So you can be a little bit patient as long as the locker room is okay with that and there's no internal issues.
Yeah. Frankie, you think they do anything?
Again, I think the moves that they make, if any, will be not moves like the Pascal Siakam move. Again, that might be moves that are, again, I'm just naming examples, but like Malcolm Brogdon's, or again, like a Bruce Brown, or guys
Dorian
like
that. Finney-Smith.
Dorian Finney-Smith, no, sure. No, again, like,
even just a Torrey Craig.
Yes.
Royce O'Neal. Right. Guys that can come in and plug the holes that you need to, like, have fixed, like, as far as
Marcus Morris Sr.
Marcus, I don't know about that. How much is he making again? He's making like 18 or
17 mil.
You can't resonate that with me. I'm sorry. I don't care.
He played well.
That's fine.
When?
Who didn't on Friday?
That's fine.
For Boston back when?
I'm talking about against
Clippers?
The Sixers.
Oh, okay. Okay.
All right.
Six.
Thanks, guys. I know you got to get to Kings practice. Be sure to follow Brandon and Frankie on social media. We will have any updates, and really interested in any sound that comes out from today's practice, with Pascal being moved, the Kings coming off that L, obviously hearing that De'Aaron didn't speak to media after the game last night. How's he feeling now as they move forward, try to get back on the winning track with some home cooking tomorrow night against the Pacers? Thank you to the Kings, the Sacktown Sports Kings insiders, Frankie and Brendan.
Thank you for having us. We'll see you at the media dining table tomorrow.
Well, you will see me there, and keep my oatmeal cookie warm. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Thank you again to Frankie Cardicelli and Brendan Nunez for an extra special Kings Roundtable with that extra segment in there. They got to run off to Kings practice. So thank you to them as we discuss Pascal Siakam. Maybe for the last time in this capacity, maybe we should do some, you know, some
in memoriam,
some funeral music to the Pascal Siakam talks. I mean, 4 years. 4 years of this.
Let me see if I can find some old Pascal trade.
Oh, yeah. Like, and the best part is you can do Pascal trade and enter almost every team in the NBA, and there's an article.
What about when he doesn't re-sign with the Pacers, like all those reports?
Oh, gosh, I can't.
What about that?
I can't.
When the Pacers sent 3 first-round picks for a guy.
Well, I would laugh. I would laugh, but at least it wouldn't be with the Raptor. It would be on his own time, right? Yeah.
It would be
the next chapter.
The
same
stuff would be leaking out, right?
Right.
It's almost the same people besides the Raptors front office.
It is. Yeah, it is interesting to see what happens these next couple days here, because you would think that, this is the domino. Now, I don't think it's a Shohei Ohtani domino where nothing's going to move until this happens.
Right.
But I think people were waiting. I think you probably secondary trades. And now that he's done, you'll see what happens from there. Going to take a quick break and hop into some Niners talk as we've been teasing. And yeah, this one is pretty insane. You have ESPN, and it's still up, by the way, but at this time, they have been quote tweeted, just to tell you how bad this is. It's called a ratio, if you've never heard of this before. And looking at this ratio, which is still up because I guess all publicity is good publicity, you have from the Jen, Gabe, and Chewy show, ESPN Milwaukee, you have 149 likes and 394 quote tweets.
I'm seeing almost 600. I'm seeing like 570.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
570. Let me see. Let me refresh.
565.
Well, that's comments. That's how many people commented as well. And nearly a million.
Oh my gosh.
Nearly a million impressions. So, hey, that's probably why they didn't take it down yet, to be honest.
They have more bookmarks than they do likes.
Yes. And Richard Sherman, our resident Niners player who never played for another team. He had a lot to say.
Yeah.
He had a lot to say. I don't remember that either. No. And here is a clip from the show where they are alluding to giving Brock Purdy a nice little push to set the tone, to put it nicely.
But Gabe, I go back and it's little things like this. And the reason we won in 95 when no one gave us a chance in San Francisco is because we intimidated them. I mean, and I always revert to Wayne Simmons. Wayne Simmons kicked the crap out of Brent Jones. And then it got contagious and then it carried over. That's why guys are going to think I'm crazy.
Well, we already thought that, so go ahead.
A 15-yard penalty. And I don't condone this, but I kind of do in the playoffs. A 15-yard penalty for a late hit on Brock Purdy is not a bad thing as long as it's worth it. I'm just saying, the mindset you go into when it's battle. And it's kind of like the reverse of hockey. What don't they do in hockey in the playoffs, Joshy?
Shave their beards.
That and one other thing.
They don't fight.
They don't fight. They don't fight. Right? This is kind of like sometimes a 15-yard penalty is worth it early in the game if you knock the living crap out of the guy. And then he kind of like sticking your helmet in the ribs of Nick Bosa is like,
but that
I'm hearing ghosts.
That guy sucks.
That guy sucks.
I have so many thoughts on this. By the way, that was former Packers tight end who's doing most of the talking, Mark Chimura.
Yeah, who they call Chewy, apparently.
Who they call Chewy. Yeah. And here's my problem with it. And this is in a lot of things in life. You don't have to say everything out loud. Yeah. I don't know how long their show is, right? Mm-hmm. Look, we're on a 4-hour show.
Yeah.
We say a lot of stuff.
It doesn't get longer than 4 hours.
It can't get longer than 4 hours, quite literally. But to me, we have these conversations all the time where it's, hey, go out there and set the tone.
Yeah.
And if you're still in the locker room, maybe you say, hey, make them feel you. There's so many different ways to say that.
Yeah.
Versus the way he said it, and he's getting completely fried. Like I said, Richard Sherman, every Niners content creator, they're saying, oh, the karma is all off. And what's, I think the worst part is that we know what he's trying to say.
Oh, for sure.
But he said it in such a terrible way. Yeah. All you had to say is, you know what, guys? They really got to set the tone here.
Yeah.
And if you got to make them feel you, you make them feel you early and you make sure it's a physical game.
Yeah. And if you pick up, and you could still even say what he said, but say it, frame it differently. You can say, hey, like you said, hey, you need to make Brock Purdy feel you early.
Yeah.
Blitz him. Any opportunity you have legally to hit him, make sure you hit him. And you know what? Even if you pick up a 15-yard penalty,
right.
I can live with it.
Yeah.
That's how you frame that, buddy.
The problem is we're eating the flag.
Yes.
We're eating the flag. Yeah, yeah. We don't care about the flag. Knock him out.
No, he's trying to play longest yard football here.
Yes, like, yes.
I mean, this is really spot on, too, for Niners fans. Like, this happened in 2011 with Bountygate with the Saints. That was the leak.
That was the Vikings.
No, it was heavy with the Niners. He said, what's his name? The defensive
Greg
coordinator.
Roman. Greg Roman. We'll never forget him.
No, I'm sorry, not Greg. As I say, we'll never forget him. I know it was Vilma, but he had that clip where he said, we want Frank Gore's head bent and running sideways or something along.
That's insane.
That happened with the Niners too, Chris, for sure.
Wow.
It wasn't just the Vikings. It was at least those two.
Well, it felt like they were trying to murder Brett Favre. So
yeah.
I think.
Well, and a lot of people are saying, hey, what's up with what happened to the brotherhood, right? Mark Chimura, Packers tight end. Aren't you supposed to look out for each other? It's a bad look altogether. I mean, I don't condone this, but I kind of do. This is the quote here. A 15-yard penalty for a late hit on Brock Purdy is not a bad thing as long as it's worth it. He could have said that in so many different ways,
yes.
And we all would have understood it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's what I mean, to bring it back to Bountygate, like it wasn't necessarily the fact that he was saying, like, go out there. Mm-hmm. I want y'all to play with your ears pinned back and just let it fly. It's the fact that he kind of put a number out there and said, for everyone who gets someone hurt, you're going to get money. You can't say,
you can't do that.
Hey, just go, like you said, eat that penalty. I don't care as long as you make him feel some pain. You just can't say that.
No. What is this, Mighty Ducks? Right. Go out there and get Charlie out the game. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Taking Dan Campbell coaching a little bit too seriously.
Please.
Taking ankles and biting kneecaps
off. Protect your
or
kneecaps
whatever.
At all times. All right. Got to get to a break. When we get back, continuing the conversation.
Greg Williams was that defense.
Greg Williams on the Niners and the Kings as well. More of your calls, more of your texts, more of your sack chat. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.